Thank you, Richard, for doing this today. It's really exciting for you to be here. Thank you.
You know what? It's my pleasure.
Likewise. And, you know, I think the easiest place to start, because I'm familiar with your work, I've been seeing you for many years. And I want to start at the very beginning, kind of your experience of getting into the scene, if that sounds good, because we're around the same age. And I'd like to hear just your experiences growing up, going to shows, getting started in the scene as a whole.
Okay. So this scene, I've always, here's the thing. I love the music.
Sure.
Big fan. You know, as we get older and we get more dated and there's like less of this music being made, you know, there's less Panic at the Disco, there's less Fall Out Boys, there's the Mike Ham. There's like, they don't, like, I don't want to say they don't make it like they used to, but they don't make that kind of music really hardly anymore. And not as much. It's still freaking out, isn't it? Oh my God. Yeah. So when I first started, like, I really wanted to be kind of like a part of something. And like, this is, I started Social Repose in 2011. But it didn't really start getting traction until like 2015. So I grinded for like 5 years. And, okay. So about getting into the scene initially, I think like a perfect example of this is some of the first shows. In 2011, 2012, I would stand outside of venues. This is before I like dressed up all crazy. I pretty much looked how I did now with shorter hair. And I would hand out CDs to people coming out of the shows. And these were anywhere from like arena shows to, you know, like maybe 1,000-cap venues. And I would always go to like Escape the Fate and Falling in Reverse shows. And like, I would always try and get close to these bands, but then they'd be mean to me. So then, so like, I don't know. I've always found like every time you try and get in with something or get into a scene or get into a group, you always like see the dysfunction inside of the group. And I don't know. I've always been kind of like very solo in everything that I do. And that like, I love the music. I love the tone. I love what the scene represents, with like alternative people and like misfits and people that don't necessarily fit in anywhere. But then that gets too big and then people get shitty. So it's just, I don't know. I love the music, but I never quite fit in with the scene. So I never really like got into the scene. I was around it, obviously orbiting it, because I want to be around like-minded people, but I don't know. I just sing and stuff, you know?
No, and I think that's a fair criticism, because, you know, it's a perfect segue, because you straddle two worlds, right? I mean, certainly as a musician, but then also as a social media personality. And I think it's fair to say that you've transcended what it would mean to be a musician in the scene. And that has contributed to your virality, you know, and I find it fascinating. And I would just love for you to speak to that, you know, just kind of open up on what that journey is like, you know?
I think mainly what I think from the very beginning, I always wanted to be an artist that didn't have to say anything and just put out music and people would just listen and like show up. That didn't happen. I look at even bands like, I mean, obviously Bring Me the Horizon is transcended the scene, but like, even they are pretty heavy on the social media game, but it's like, they didn't feel like they had to be influencers, to do it. So I think my need, and thirst for attention, it was stemmed from me feeling like I'm not talented enough to just make good enough music. So I made YouTube videos and then people liked those. So I kept making them.
Fair enough.
And then it kept going. Although obviously there's some merit in that like I love I went to film school, so I love cinematography. I love camera shit. I love doing that. It's super fun. It's honestly like I would say 50-50 between like music production and writing songs and making videos, because there's an art in making videos. So I guess that went hand in hand with like my skill set. But I do the influencer side and like trying to, I mean, like in early, about 5 minutes ago when I was ranting about not fitting into the scene. Well, being an influencer, it's all about like being liked. And I was never good at that. Like, being liked. And you know, like,
sure,
I'm saying,
I do.
But as an influencer, it's like, so it's a social aspect, and I've never been good at, I mean, even in real life, not great at being social with people. So that was always baffling to me how that kind of like took, like that became a big part of what I do, is like being kind of like a an influencer type, somebody who's like on social media that also does music.
That's fair. So you would say that your iconography as an influencer takes precedent over your work as a musician.
I would say it wasn't intentional, but the my look is so striking and so silly and outlandish. And but I've had so much fun with it that like I kept doing, I still do. I love doing it because it's so fun and it's so interesting to me. And it really, I mean, as an artist, you want to create your own, you know, your own source. Like you have to do your own thing if you want to survive. So I do really enjoy it, but the idea of like being an influencer and having things to say outside of my music makes me cringe so hard. You know, I did it, and I continue to do it.
It's true, but let's speak to iconography then. Let's speak to that because this is where you have transcended. And let me explain what I mean by that. You have a level of iconography that obviously divides people. For someone like me, I told you I've always been a fan of your work. And
That's good.
I think that being said, look, it's like when we're talking about costuming, when we're talking about theatrics, that's something that I think we both indulge in. How did that begin? How did it begin the moment where you kind of turned the knife, turned the screw a little bit, might be a better analogy, and you said, I want to move into a more how would I say this? A realm of more iconography, if you will, where you went with the costuming, you went with the sensationalism. When did that happen, and what was that thought process like?
Well, to be honest, from 2011 to 2015, I literally just looked like an emo kid that wore, you know, black V-necks and skinny jeans and had straight black swoopy hair and sang about my problems, and nobody cared. You know, but like looking back on it, I didn't understand at the time. I'm like, my music is so good. Why does nobody give a shit? And then you look back and you're like, oh, okay, I can see why. But what, you know, yeah, it was just very generic and uninteresting. I mean, it wasn't, I didn't work hard enough to like find something interesting. Like, why would somebody want to listen to my music, or why would somebody want to watch me? Until I started like getting more adventurous and like really pushing myself to like, you know, what do I want to look like? What, like if I were to go on stage, why would somebody want to watch me? And it sure isn't because it's like another, just another emo kid like screaming about his problems. You know, so I think initially, at least it started with the headdress, because of course it did, at least when things started to do decent. It started because I was a big fan of Deadmau5. It like I said this a thousand times, where it's like, Deadmau5, he makes, I really like his music. I mean, you know, he's the one of the pioneer of like modern EDM. But his mouse head is so silly and so iconic, and it's like you can't mistake it for anything else. It's like you see the mouse head, you're like, that's Deadmau5. And I would say, I mean, obviously his music's very good, it's very successful, but I would say a good portion of his success is because it's so recognizable. It's so like it pulls you in. So I was like, I need something like that.
Fair
Um,
enough.
and
Okay.
one day I was on the internet and I saw the headdress, and you know, I wanted more, like, and I wanted to look like a World of Warcraft character. You know,
Okay.
I wanted to be very like a warrior type, and I wanted to look big. Because I'm not physically imposing as a person. You know, sorry, the internet thinks I'm 5'8", which, you know, just really, it's really grinds my gears. Which, you know, but the headdress is big. It just, I don't know, it just worked. I put it on and it stayed on my head, and it like, I don't, it's very lightweight. I think it looked really cool, and it just kind of like, it was a snowball from there.
And how would you describe that character?
I mean, I'd like to call it a character, but it's not. It's just me being louder.
So it's an
You know,
exaggerated version of yourself.
everyone likes to say that it's like, oh, it's just a character, but it's like, that's a way of deflection. You know what I'm saying? And like, it obviously is exaggerated because it's so easy to be bigger when you look like that, when you have crazy makeup on and you have literal armor. Even in the beginning, I had like leather armor because I couldn't afford plate because life is a video game.
Totally.
I don't know. It's just, it's so easy to be larger than life when you're in costume. And like, if you're on stage and people genuinely like even in like 2014, when I had just started that, and I probably had 1,000 followers on social media. And I went to Warped Tour. That was the first time I realized this thing could work. Is I went to Warped Tour in that outfit, went back when security was not as crazy. And like, I just had like a studded leather jacket and like torn up skinny jeans and the headdress and like a couple blinged out things, kind of like a very cheap Black Veil Brides. And people were like lining up to take photos with me. They had no way they knew who I was. Like there was zero, like maybe one person was like, "Man, I think I saw you on Facebook." But it was like the way that it capped it. People like thought I was famous. People were like, "You have to be in a band or something." And they all wanted photos with me, and they treated me like I was famous. And it was just like, I don't know. I was like, okay, there's definitely something to this that like captivates people. So like, I wanted to explore that.
So let's speak a bit more to that before we go forward, because I'm very curious about that era of the scene. Now, I know you said you feel more adjacent to the scene because truly what you do is so different, but I feel adjacent as well. More so like as it pertains to fashion and things like that. I'm, you know, not within the musical realm of the scene. So I would to know.
Why isn't that? Do you just not like making music?
I'd love to. Given the opportunity, I would do it.
Because I would
try anything.
I saw one of your, it was an art installation. It was on your Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Look fucking sick.
I appreciate that. I would love to. Come, honestly, let's figure out a way to do something together. I would love to just expand that universe. But yeah, art installations, fashion, and that particular thing was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like that ties back into even my next question, because you know, you do a variety of different things, but expanding on that era of the scene. I want to say maybe 2010 to 2020, let's say 2017, when kind of alternative rap came into the picture. What was that era of the scene like for you? Because I wasn't really participating as much then. And I just want to know what that energy was like, what it was like, you know, at the height of Warped Tour, all of these things. If you could just kind of run me through that.
I mean, I was in it. I started in 2004. I mean, I've been going to Warped Tour since 2009 because like I'm 33. But like, you know, I was 19 in 2009. So like,
for sure.
I was prime age for like peak MySpace years. But I was not popular on the internet then. So I would say from like late 2014 to like 2017 was when I was like in a clique from like that was like emo scene, like alternative. And the few positive things I could say about it is it was the only time I was really like part of a thing. Like, you know, we had like the My Digital Escape and all the alternative, like it was like YouTubers. Like, and this was the only time where this happened, where there was like probably 15 to 20 of us and everybody had a solid following. Everyone had like a healthy viewership. Everybody was kind of doing similar things, although each person had like their individual strengths. It felt nice because like it wasn't an island. Everybody was like collabing with it. I would go to LA all the time and we would make just a shit ton of content and people loved it. Even if the content was terrible by today's standards, like it was like just a lot of, I don't want to go as far and say camaraderie, but like there was just a lot going on and people were definitely like raising each other up. And then, you know, then the cancel culture kind of thing started around, you know, 2016, 17, and then everyone tore each other apart.
For sure.
And the scene kind of collapsed in on itself. You know, emo got less popular, though arguably I would say it's still as popular. It's just different. But those 3 or 4 years were like Warped Tour is really strong, like 2015, 2016. Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And I think a lot of, you know, and there wasn't a lot of like anger and hate. It was more like everyone was kind of like together on things, which was nice.
So let's talk about where the environment stands now. Maybe it could be for the scene. Maybe it could be for alternative social media culture. You know, I'm not sure because everything's become so fragmented. To your point, there it was cohesive. There was a moment in time, as you just mentioned, where things seemed to be cohesive within that community. Now everything is so fragmented.
Yeah, like everyone like knew, personally knew each other. Like all the YouTubers, maybe, I mean, we would say we were friends, but you know it is. But everyone was like connected.
Sure.
Yeah, it was cool. It's very not like that now.
How would you describe it now, and how have things changed?
Well, I think I don't know if like my experience is a good like representation of how things are, because I'm very like, I got burned by all of that, and I like course corrected. It took many years, but like I'm definitely an island now. Like I do, and you know, and I do my own thing, and I'm doing arguably just as good as that. It's just different. Like it's hard to compare different like chapters of this because it's you just don't know where it's gonna go. But I think like it's just I very rarely collaborate with people, whereas before it was like every month it was just like someone just people just appearing in video, you know,
they were
like
spawning.
You literally never knew who you're gonna get, and like it was so random and crazy, and you would collab with anyone, it doesn't matter. Whereas now I'm like very picky with who I collaborate with. I'm much more like guarded. I don't like let anyone in. I'm very just protective about like what I do and what I put out. That's the shifting landscape of society, but also I got older, and like I've learned what works for me, you know, and everyone's different, but for me it's like I said, in 2011 I always wanted to be a musician. I always wanted to like make music, and that was always the core goal, and then along the way I became an influencer. And then I got like smushed into a pulp, and I was like, okay, I don't like that. I don't want to base my like self-worth and everything that I have based on how people feel about me.
For sure.
So I went back to music a few years ago, and I've just been doing a lot of that. So, I'm definitely an island, and I feel like a lot of people can share that sentiment, but I don't know, cause I don't talk to anyone. But what I do is I do my own thing.
Surprisingly, I feel the same way. The world has a tendency to do that, you know, after life experiences, the world has a tendency to do that. So I do share that sentiment. Mm-hmm. But I suppose that brings us into the next part, right? I mean, in terms of your work in the present. So you're pretty omnipresent, as you were talking about the work you're doing now. If you could just explore that, because you're pretty much everywhere, at least when I'm on social media, I always see you. So yeah, I can't. And we're here now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, I've always liked it. You know, I'm kind of like a cockroach, you know, which better or worse, like, you know, people thought they could crush me back a few years ago. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I don't give up. I change. I feel like for people who, you know, it's so hard to be a professional artist and like make a living off of doing art because you have to make money, and making money, you need to compromise on your art, and that's like anti-art. If a true artist to their core shouldn't have to worry about money, which is why all professional artists are generally rich people, because you know you don't have to worry about appeasing audiences. Anyway, I'm going on a tangent. What was the initial question?
Mostly just concentrating on your work right now and just everything that you're working on, finding a starting point for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's always like my previous like YouTuber tendencies always come out, where like the picnic table videos, where like I just do like a quarter of a cover in my backyard on a picnic table, and I did one of those and it got a million views, and I was like, oh. And so I did 500 of them, you know, like, and that's so YouTube, where like you find you get one video and you just try them out, and you know you fall flat on your face, you know, 100 times, but then you get one video that does well, and then you do it 1,000 times, and hopefully you like that video. Which I did because it's like it does require me to sing, and a lot of it, I would say 90% of it's not, it's cover music, it's not original stuff, but I do like the bands, I like the songs, and it does funnel people in to my music, so it's been very good, but in, like, God, where was I going with like the influencer thing of like longevity and being an internet person? There is compromise in it, and that you have to like find like ways to make sustainable content if you want to like survive, especially financially, or to like keep growing. But it's like also very anti-art. So I don't know. I'm always very conflicted with like how I make content, because like the bread and butter right now is like covers and like thing and things that are really easy to kind of just spit out. And I think they're fine, but I, you know, it's a lot of the times it ends up being quantity over quality. But you also have to make a living, and you have to, you know, I don't want to get a real job. Who wants a real job?
I agree.
You know, and then occasionally I put out an original song that I'll shove a shit ton of money into. So that's kind of how I do it. But yeah, I mean, that, yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to trail off there.
That's perfect. And the ellipsis.
Yeah.
I think let's go back to that, the bread and butter. As you mentioned it, let's talk about also the picnic table covers, because regardless of what the context is, again, incredibly viral. Everyone has seen these. Everyone has seen these. Let's just talk maybe some interesting experiences you've had doing these, or reactions you've had, interesting moments. Like, what are some things that surprised you in the course of making those covers that have been like, wow, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, the wildest one was last week. You probably saw, I mean, yeah, last week, last year I did a cover of The Kill, 30 Seconds to Mars, which, you know, is a cover. You know, looking back at it, I'm like, it's so funny, like, the ones where I'm like, I could have done a little better on, you know, sometimes you just kind of, like, sing it, and I'm like, ah, it's probably fine, and then you put it up, but, you know, it's, look, you know, you look back on it, you're like, yeah, I probably could have hit that note a little better. But then Jared Leto saw it, and then, like, flew me out to California, and, like, 12 hours notice. I get at like 5 p.m. the day before, get an email from his team being like, yo, you want to come play Anaheim tomorrow? I'm like, oh, it'll be like a cute little acoustic show. It's like, no, it's the iHeartRadio like festival where, like, you know, Fall Out Boy went on right after us, and the 1975 went on right before us. Like, they were all back. Like, it's just like, I've done so many tours, but like, I can expect between like 50 and 100 people. We play like bars, and it's fine, and it's good. And there's definitely like fun to be had there. But then to go, I think the biggest show I ever played was maybe 350, 400 people in Europe. And then to go from that to going on stage with Jared Leto and Mikey Way was just, I saw him on, he was just on bass, and I got to sing The Kill with Jared Leto because I did this stupid picnic bench cover. So like, you truly never know, like, when you post things on the internet, you don't know where they're gonna go, and that's so fun. I think that's so fun. Like, it wasn't like that before, and now whenever I post something, like, I mean, I posted a Neck Deep cover, a Part of Me, a couple weeks ago, and they reposted it, and they've never reposted a video before. That's the only video they've ever reposted. That
oh, wow.
Makes me feel so good, because I'm like, they liked it. That's so cool.
No, it is. It's incredible how these things happen so spontaneously. And yes, I did see that as well. The 30 Seconds to Mars. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. Could you talk a little bit or more about that experience and what that was like being on stage with Mikey and Jared? Well, and
I definitely could have sang better. I was really beating myself up. I mean, I think I did okay. The mic didn't work walking out there, which is like nightmare fuel. they got my mic working, but it was definitely like, just, I mean, I don't know, it's a dream. Like, what do you, you know, he asked me to play, to sing their biggest song. I mean, not sing, like, I helped him sing it. He was sick. And it's just like, you know, like, I wish I had more time to prepare, you know, cause I would have, yeah, I'd learn I knew the song, but I didn't know the song cause it's so old. And so I had to, like, you know, prepare for that, but just like getting literally thrown into the fire there, in a good way. Cause like, obviously, you know, I'm just happy to be there, but they, like, just standing there backstage during 30 Seconds to Mars' set and I've never been a part of anything like an arena size. It was a sold out arena. It was like 15,000 people, and there's a big spotlight on you. It was kind of it was one of those things where I knew when I got the email, which was like 15 hours before I was on, like 15 hours from in Washington DC to the stage. Yeah, it was about 15 hours. So I literally got it and was like, fuck, all right, like, because, you know, you have to like pack up all your stuff and do all the logistics to it. But I knew going out there was going to be like a core memory, because it's, you know, the biggest show I've ever played before that was like maybe 200-300 people. And then this was 15,000, obviously not my fan. Well, maybe like a couple, maybe 12 of them. But it was, you know, it's one of those things where I knew like not a lot of people get to do, not a lot of entertainers get to do, get to go out there, let alone like try and sing and like do the thing that you're supposed to be good at. So that was really cool. It was really neat. There was technical difficulties, which, you know, I kind of expected to happen. It can't be perfect, but the fact that I was even out there was sick. And I thought I would be more scared being up there, but I kind of wasn't. Jared Leto was super nice. I don't know, like, I found the bigger the celebrity, the more nice they are. I can't tell if it's like because of a PR team or whatnot, but it was like, I knew overall, even if there was like frustrations involved because it was so last minute and it was so stressful, and like I just wanted to like do well up there, in the back of my head there's always like this gratefulness of just like being like, yeah, just being in front of that many people is sick. It's like, you know, like you can't beat it. Like, you can't beat that feeling of like having the spotlight on you and being able to do what you do.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, the dichotomy between being in a huge arena like that and basically touring, what that experience was like for you, because you still are seasoned in terms of having gone on many tours. Contrast kind of your likes and dislikes about that process, because not many people get to see behind the scenes. They think it is a lot of glamour. What is that experience really like, and what are your sentiments on that?
I mean, I think anyone who goes to smaller shows, and I'm talking about like less than 1,000 people, will know that touring is not glamorous. I liken it to camping. It's like, it's camping, but you also have to like, you know, look presentable and like perform every night. So, and it's also like, I always found that I, since I don't like leave my house very often, I get sick really easily. On tour, you know, I'll get in a month, I'll get sick 3 different times. Like, I'll have like a cold, then I'll get laryngitis, and I'll do this, that, because you're around so many different new people. And it's just, yeah, it's tough. It's like, it's just, it's physically exhausting. It's mentally exhausting. I've always said that it's like, I like complain and bellyache about it all the time, but also it's a privilege to be there and to be, you know, there's nothing really compares to when a show is going really well. And, you know, maybe even if 100 kids show up and they all know most of the words to your songs and you get to sing along with them and, you know, it's a fun, good, jolly old time like that. It's hard to beat that, but that's only 1 hour out of like, you know, 48 other hours of like driving on an empty open road where 18 wheelers want to kill you. And like, you're eating fast food and like, you know, gas station, you don't get hardly any sleep. You have to make sure everything goes right, so you get to the shows. It's very financially risky. Like, if something goes wrong, since I'm a solo artist and I'm not signed to a label or anything like that, if something goes wrong, like, I am so fucked. Like, I am like, just like gargantuan, just it could be over if my car gets hit, or if the trailer gets hit, which happens, or if the trailer gets stolen. Like, I don't have insurance, like production insurance for that. So it's just, but so I'm very careful with like when and where I go on tour now. I really enjoy being a digital creator. I enjoy like making a living that way. But they're obviously like, touring isn't all bad. But I'm as an introverted fellow, it's not always for me.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that. I empathize wholly. And, you know, that's an interesting perspective. Two things come from that. Number one, do you have a favorite touring memory, if at all? Because me, I probably wouldn't find anything. Tell me what your favorite memory is.
Oh, man. Okay. I think one of my favorite ones, it was in the Netherlands. It was my one and only European / UK tour. And I think, like, there was over 300 people. It was one of my, I would say, biggest shows, because biggest headline shows, which was, like, 300 people. Which, you know, for me, it was really fucking good. I was like, yes! I figured I wanted to do this thing where I wanted to shave my, like, this is when I was getting canceled. So it was like, you know, nothing was off the table as far as I'm like, man, my fucking career is over. So like, it was almost liberating. I mean, it was a very depressing point in my life, but it was very liberating in a way that I could kind of do anything. Cause I'm like, well, I'm already fucked. So I got up on stage and played this like 20-minute interlude and shaved my head on stage. And just didn't say anything and just like got on my knees and just shaved my head and was just like, ah! It was like, oh, I'm an artist. So that was pretty sick. I was very happy in front of like a large crowd that, you know, really enjoyed me. But it was like, you know, because I always love that with artists, like you, when you don't know what they're going to do, you're just like, where's this going? And you hope it's good. And if you like the artist, you assume it's going to go somewhere. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Okay, that's pretty wild. It wasn't as crazy as I thought it would be, but that's perfect.
I mean,
that's yeah. I wonder though, you know, speaking to being a digital creator and just having crazy moments and where things are headed in terms of technology, we touched on this briefly, but talk to me about live performances as it pertains potentially to the metaverse, as it pertains to maybe you doing live performances in the future digitally. I could see that with you especially. So I want to know your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, no one gives a fuck about VR or the metaverse. See, we recorded 45 minutes that will never see the light of day where I just rant about how I love VR. But then I thought about that. I was like, nobody gives a shit. Like, anytime I talk about VR, I love VR. I think it's great. I think it's, every time I strap into my Index, it's right there in that room. And it's on the floor. I fucking love it. I could see the use case for it. Whenever I'm in it, I wish the world could experience what it's like to be strapped into even this early phase of VR.
Okay.
I'm sure it's good. It's going to be awesome. But, you know, nobody gives a fuck. It's so hard. I wish people did, though. Performances, like, you know, going to a show, like, I went to When We Were Young Festival, not the last year, 2 years ago, and okay. I never go to festivals. I just don't, because I don't like massive groups of people.
Sure.
But I went because, you know, like MyChem, Fall Out Boy, like every fucking band under the sun was playing that festival. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go. And, you know, lo and behold, I was like, wow, I obviously the band sounded great, but I just do not like large festivals. So if I could somehow like strap into VR and experience a festival from the ground floor without actually having to be around 80,000 stupid fucking people, I would do it. That'd be great. I'd pay $20 for that.
I'd pay $20. I love when you say strap in specifically. There's something like very unique about that choice of phrasing. I just want to get strapped in.
You're strapping in. I've got the haptic vest too. It looks so lame, but I love it.
So, okay. So I mentioned this previously, but 100-foot projection of you, that's obviously where this is all headed, right? People are going to have to endure you as 100-foot projection, not just in their phone, but in every city in the world.
I mean, if you think about it, if you hold your phone close enough to your face, like to scale, I'm almost 100 feet tall.
That's a fair point. Yeah, you got me on that one. It's
like my goal is to be unavoidable by everyone on the planet. That's my goal. And, you know, at Thanksgiving last year, my cousin, who's he's great. He's a normie, but he's great.
Fair enough.
He sat next to me and he was just like, dude, I saw you on the front page of Reddit yesterday, and I was like, I'm doing pretty good. Even though, I, you know, financially, it does not pay well. None of this pays well. But, you know, infamy has its perks, I guess.
So do you strive to be the most infamous artist on the planet, for better or for worse?
People show up to your house and, like, are mean to you in public. You would not believe how many people... Okay, it's a specific look.
Okay.
Like if I'm walking in the mall or whatever, and I'm with my partner, we're walking in the mall, and you could just see somebody. They always are under the age of 30. They probably have dyed hair, but not always. And we lock eyes, and they don't say anything, but you see the light. They like do a double take, and then a light bulb goes off, and it's a very specific. Because I've been doing this for like 15 years now, you know exactly what the look is, and I'm like they. And they won't say anything because they're not like a big enough fan, but like you know it, and you both have a moment, and I'm just like, don't you fucking do it. And then they don't. And then we go on our right way. But you know, it's fine, you know? But a lot of people, every time I go to the Renaissance Festival, because for some reason people just like to get really dramatic there, but I fucking love Renaissance festivals because I get to dress up. And then everybody they talk so much shit at it, but they never say it to your face. And it's just like, this is so high school. If you want to say something mean, say it to my face. Well, actually, don't say anything at all. But like, it's just like, yeah, people are really mean. I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, it's either a look of, as you said, it's either a look of absolute admiration or a look of contempt. And you don't know if that interaction is going to be violence or,
A lot of it
you
is
know.
more like people aren't used to seeing somebody they like. I'm famous. It's like I don't want to say famous. It's like you, they know you from the internet. They've like
Sure.
seen you digitally, and they're like, "Oh, like you know." Whether it's contempt or not, whether they're a fan or not, it's more just the excitement of being like, "What?" So it's more of that.
That's totally fair. I mean, because you know, it's like, okay, I obviously prefaced the conversation with being like, Richard, you know where I'm coming from. I'm a fan of yours. I've always been fascinated by your journey. So that was so important for me to have this conversation. But I could imagine if we were together, I might fear for your life a little bit, you know, granted some of the things that I've
That.
read, you know.
No, I don't know about that, but people definitely walk up to me and be like, "Why did you cheat on your girlfriend?" I'm like, "That was 7 years ago, bro. Like, come on, man. Just let me live my life." You know what I'm saying? Like, I have dated so many people since then. It's ridiculous, but I just don't. Here, I don't know if I talked about this because this was like several days ago, but the
Sure,
idea of
please.
me being my like dramatic past is like immortalized because I was so vocal then, but I've been so quiet the last like 5 or so years and just focusing on music because I'm like, yeah, maybe I don't want to participate in the drama verse. Maybe I just want to be an artist. Maybe I feel like I have more to give than that. And I'm just gonna do that. But then everybody who doesn't really care much about my music, but knows me as an influencer only remembers, 2016, 2017, where I was like a very boisterous fellow. So I don't know. Anyway.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about, and specifically fandom, because we touched on fandom previously, but it has become something that I can't comprehend. I mentioned to you, like, look, I'm at this point scene adjacent. I'm in the scene. We're both scene adjacent, let's put it this way.
Sure.
And I try to figure out what's kind of going on because I'm interested, but I don't participate in the drama. I don't participate in any of the conversation. I just kind of view it from afar. So what have you noticed have been the most substantial changes in the fandom, your fandom or the fandom as a whole since you started your career in this?
Well, it's two different things. Like my fandom specifically, they're a very vocal bunch. But as I've aged, I'm 33 now, and as the scene has aged, I saw Fall. I would say hanging out with Fall Out Boy. I was right next to them, and they were ignoring me, even though they know who I was. They knew, I was. They're just look. Everyone's older, man. They're all in their 40s. Like everyone's just older, so it gets a little. So my audience has obviously gotten older. It's much more eclectic now, because I couldn't even like pigeonhole like if you'd say like what's the average Social Repose fan, and I'm like I don't know, probably more alternative, maybe dyed hair or there's a lot of black, but as far as age, race, ethnicity, gender, I couldn't tell you, it's 50-50 on everything, and as
Fair
far
enough.
as the scene itself, I don't think things really have changed. Obviously, the digital age makes things more accessible. But if you look at bands like Water Parks, Bad Omens, Sleep Token, who are like the kind of big boys in the alternative scene right now, their fan bases are super annoying and stupid. And it was like that before. you know, when Pierce the Veil and Sleeping with Sirens and MyChem and all, you know, their fan bases were equally annoying when they were on top. And, you know, it's just fandom shit, and it's fun. Like, and, you know, you can't blame them for, like, I remember I was really into the 21 Pilots fandom in, like, 2013, and it was also super annoying, but it was fun. So you can't blame people for getting into things.
No, that was perfectly stated. Yeah. And, you know, people do tend to fixate on obviously the more negative sensational components. That's just human nature, right? But all in all, that's a very good way of articulating it. So I guess we'll shift the focus kind of to the final part of this, and that is fashion. I had been wanting to talk to you a little bit more about fashion because I know we talked about your particular fashion in your work as not being a costume. It's more of an elevated reality. It's a heightened reality of you as a person. But tell me, do you draw inspiration?
I could never. That my outfit is absolutely a costume. I could never wear that in real life. That shit sucks.
Have you ever tried it? Have you ever worn it in real life?
But it's like heavy and it hurts after 2 hours. It's metal. It wasn't always like that. But anyway, continue.
No, I was just wanting to know maybe, well, I do want to see you go out in it actually, but sure. I would like to know your fashion inspirations, maybe movie inspirations, just delving some more into that because I want to get to know more what inspires you, like as you add on to your persona.
Well, you know, big fan of Blade Runner, you know, Jared Leto.
Shout out Jared. I know.
You like Blade Runner, Jared! Yeah, no, I've always, from the beginning, I literally wrote it down in, like, a document in 2011 when I started Social Repose, that, like, I just wanted to be I wanted to be tier 4, the tier 4 Warlock set in World of Warcraft. Tier 5 is pretty cool, too. But, you know, it's pretty sick. And I feel like I achieved that. But, you know, I've always been really driven by, like, video game aesthetics, like villains in video games, World of Warcraft, Warframe, like those types of games. And I just always loved like how angular and I go through phases where I was like going through a more like cyberpunk phase of that. And that wasn't when cyberpunk was big. This was like 2018 when everything was lit up and I had like just a lot of lights and I was very glowy and metally. But then I found that I just hated dealing with wires and batteries and I got shocked too many times. So I was like, all right, we're stripping it back. So it's like, and now it's more like gothic, kind of like medieval, a lot more armor, definitely still more steampunk vibes. But it's like I just go through phases where I just try things out. But I mean, and that's art, is like you keep trying things out. And obviously, you know, some things work better than others. But I don't know. It's just constantly experimenting. I don't really have like an end. The outfit, it never has an end goal. It's more just like a thing that is constantly like amorphous and like evolving.
It's modular. I didn't realize that.
It's very modular.
Wow. So I guess that brings us to kind of the last part of that. And this is interesting. Okay. So we spoke very briefly about AI, but I'm kind of wondering, do you see yourself adding maybe a technological component to your costume? I know that's a bit obscure, but I'm curious maybe in the future with advances like in, for example, technology-based textiles, do you see yourself basically just becoming a sort of cyborg?
If I won the lottery, as the meme says, I wouldn't tell anybody, but there would be signs. I would get, if I had an unlimited, let's say you dropped $500,000 in my account tomorrow. I would, and I don't think they're quite available, but I would definitely get AI controlled animatronic wings, okay. Like wings move with you. I've seen prototypes and mm-hmm. They're just definitely they're generally like art installations, or they're like specific artists make them, but they're not really practical. But I would like a pair of really light wings, a lightweight like aluminum wings that have like motors in them that are controlled by AI, so they can like sense where you are, like they move, they come in and out, they can like sense what you're doing, they move with your arms, they like move with you. I think that'd be very cool. I don't think that technology is like quite there yet, it's like in a practical sense. But I would definitely, as far as like physically using AI I would use it with like motors and stuff. You know, obviously lights and stuff like that. But I don't know, lights are tough because I don't like dealing with lots of batteries all over me, and it gets really confusing. But definitely a really crazy pair of wings would be cool.
Absolutely sick. Well, That concludes what has been an awesome conversation.
And no, it doesn't. We're going to keep going. Two more hours. Let's go.
We could probably do eight, if I'm being honest with you. I'd take some breaks in between, but I probably could because, you know, autism and whatnot, I could handle it.
Hell yeah.
So you're everywhere, so there's no need for me to reference that. But what's coming next? We got to know what's coming next.
Well, you know, I'm planning my next cancellation in order to launch my next album. So we'll be on the lookout. I mean, you don't even have to be on the lookout. You'll hear about it. You know, I'm not going to say when or where. I'm working on a couple new songs, new music videos. No tours because fuck all you. Just kidding. No. No tour dates. No, I don't want to do that. I don't have a manager. How the fuck do people tour without managers? It's like you just book your own shows, but I don't know.
You could do it all yourself.
I could just email the venues and I could totally do that. But then you have to it's just so much. And no, I don't want to do it. New music though. Very good. Very excited about that. That's pretty much it. That's like what I do in my day to day, just like work on music and then post on the internet and then work on more music. It's very liberating. I love it a lot.
Well, you know, I'm super excited. We're going to have to come back and do another conversation in the future if you'll agree to it ahead of time.
Yeah, that'd
be great. I need your contract and blood right now, but let's do it.
No, you're going to become the next great tycoon in the alternative industry. You're going to be the podcast in the alternative, you know, circle.
You know, what we need more of in the society, I'll end this on a philosophical note, we need more discourse, we need dialogue, we need conversation, everything else is noise.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
probably you need to care less and just focus on the act, like, what is the person producing? I don't know, like, I've found that if I just block it all out and just keep doing my thing, people appreciate it more. Like, don't dwell, you just do, you know?
When I think... What that means to me is just that I have been so inspired by everything you have done over the course of your career. And there's so many people like me. And, you know, just, you know, you already do ignore the noise. You know, the result speaks for itself. That's it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for doing this interview today. We'll be speaking more in the future. I appreciate you so much, man.
Yeah, it's been great.